Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
But the holidays tend to accelerate everything, maybe because there's so much to do and not enough time to do it, which tends to make me feel like time is spinning faster than I can keep up. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The poll is now available. You can vote. I just retweeted A-Law Radio, but you can also find it at Amy After Hours. And I'll throw that up on our Facebook page as soon as I have the opportunity. I'm sure sometime this hour. We've been talking about the coaching vacancies that we know of and the ones that we don't. Where will we see others? It wasn't a super Black Friday. I would say it was more like a gray Friday. It probably because the teams that made changes during the year, we knew that those coaches were likely going to end up seeing the end of their tenure. New York, New Orleans, and then also in Chicago, those owners didn't wait. So those could have been other additions, or I guess I should say subtractions, on Black Friday, but they were not because they'd already been informed of their untimely demise. I know that sounds very melodramatic. So those three, plus New England, that's four. Also, Jacksonville is five. What about Cleveland? Well, we didn't really get an update on anything to do with the Browns coaching staff, but we did get an update on the Browns quarterback situation. And so we'll share that with you as we head through this hour of the show. Myles Garrett got a little update on him too, only because the team had a 3-14 campaign. So he's kind of talking about Andrew Berry, the general manager, kind of talking about whether or not there will be a rebuild in the offseason. For his part, Kevin Stefanski doesn't anticipate any major staff changes. That's what he said, though they lost offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, and they also replaced their offensive line coach. So I suppose in addition to those changes, don't expect too much else. I can't imagine that the Browns feel the need to fire Kevin Stefanski, but I've learned over my time in this business that generally how I think and how the Browns think are two completely different wavelengths. And by the Browns, I mean the ownership of the Browns. So I would say that'd be a ridiculous move to fire Kevin Stefanski. Don't think there's going to be a change in Cincinnati either. That's probably more conjecture and speculation than anything, though they did miss the playoffs. We now know that the Giants will keep Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, so they're not making a change at either coach or GM. And on Monday, the owner, John Mara, spoke about why he decided to stand pat as opposed to starting over.
We stunk this year, okay? The results on the field were not what we wanted them to be. There were a number of factors that went into that. A lot of that has already been discussed with the coach and with Joe, and will continue to be discussed. And but I liked what I heard from them on Friday afternoon. I like what their plan is going forward, and we're going to stay with it.
So that's John Mayer, who's the managing partner, of course, the owner, and he says they're going to stick with it, but he did say, "I'm running out of patience." So he made his announcement in a statement, despite the 3-14 season. He felt like there were productive conversations. In the statement, he talked about how confident he is in the process that Joe and Brian have implemented and their vision for our team. Quote, "We look forward to the future and the result we all desire." So Daboll found out officially on Monday morning. And he has indicated he never thought that that would be anything different, right? He never expected or anticipated that there would be a change. Both he and the GM have a couple years left on their contracts. But there's got to be at least a bit of relief. when you hear Mara say that he's just about run out of patience and that this rebuilding process, or at least the uptick, something positive to show for all the work and to show for the vision, it better not take too long because he's running out of patience. I might not believe that with other owners, but with Mara, because he really doesn't use that type of language often, and because he's very soft-spoken, he's much more measured in his comments. He chooses not to go public with a lot of his decisions. In fact, he doesn't like the public, and I would say more the media, having any kind of an inside look. That whole thing with Saquon Barkley and Hard Knocks, hates it. Absolutely hates the fact that he was exposed, if you will, and has tried to set the record straight. So he generally doesn't speak until he's darn good and ready, until he is convinced that it's the time. He was also asked about whether or not his GM coach tandem start 25 on the hot seat, the proverbial hot seat.
You guys are going to have number one on the hot seat going forward. So no matter how I answer that question, we're going to have to see. I'm going to have to be in a better mood this time next year than I am right now.
Seriously, you don't hear that type of emotion from John Mara very often. Producer Pete has been a longtime New Yorker, a native New Yorker. I don't know how long. I'd have to go back and look. I actually don't know how long the Maras have owned the team or how long he's been in charge, but very rarely will you hear him do anything other than kind of vanilla. I don't want to say coach speak because he's not a coach, but he plays his cards pretty close to the vest, and he talks so softly that now that he's using this type of language and this type of emotion, you know he's serious.
Yeah, it's a very different trend for someone that's very measured. Mm-hmm. He's and just the coaching history the last 10 years is very different from what the Giants have done in their history, at least for the 20-plus years before that. So it's a very different atmosphere. Still the same roots, but a very different mindset or atmosphere over there in Giant Land.
You're right. As you talk about the Giants and the coaches that they've had in their past, the coaches that they've been successful with, maybe that's part of the reason why Mara and Steve Tisch, who is also a managing partner, that they've chosen to stay in that, to stay with Daboll and Shane, because what they don't want is to continue this cycle where they just are constantly changing over and over again. Now, they've made some really poor decisions, and so that's kind of on them. But if you go back to, we won't go too far back, maybe Bill Parcells, so iconic Giants coach, from 1983 to 1990. Then there was this weird kind of brief sojourn with Ray Handley, and then Dan Reeves was in. He was in for a handful of seasons. Then Jim Fossil from 97 to 03. The big one, though, that people kind of referred to, the cornerstone for them for such a long time, was Tom Coughlin. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl winning coach two times in both 07 and 11 seasons. And he was the coach for over a decade. But since then, Ben McAdont, as I call him, that was a disaster.
Ben McAdoofus.
Right. Ben McAdoo, he was in. He didn't even make it through the season, did he? He kind of botched that whole situation with Eli Manning at the end, right? So that was a disaster. He got replaced before the end of the season, didn't he?
You know what? I try not to remember a lot of that time, but I think,
yeah,
I think
McAdoo was fired 12 games into the 17 season.
That's right.
Oh, that was Spags.
Him and Reese got let go at the same time, the GM, and Spags took over for the rest of the year.
Yes, Steve Spagnuolo, who is now the defensive coordinator in Kansas City and crushing it since he got there, and they love him. So Steve Spagnuolo took over for a handful of games. Then it was Pat Shurmur. Then it was Joe Judge. Now it's Brian Daboll. And so in each of the cases, other than Spagnuolo, who was an interim, you've got McAdoo for a season and a half, Shurmur for two seasons, Judge for two seasons. Daboll has now finished up season number three, right? You keep spinning that wheel, and it's a revolving door, and the records are going to continue to remain 3 wins, 4 wins, maybe 5 wins. Other than the 1 year, and that was when Daboll was coach of the year in 22, the 1 year in which Saquon Barkley crushed it, Daniel Jones played the best he possibly can, the defense was really good, they end up making it to the playoffs as a wild card, and that was a surprise, right? That was the year that 3 teams from the NFC East went. Eagles ended up in the Super Bowl, so it was a completely different, a different kind of aberration for the Giants. But otherwise, they've not made the playoffs since Eli Manning was the quarterback.
Yeah, it's a stretch of time that they have not been able to. That's very rare for the Giants to have not have success. I mean, in the 70s, you had that really bad stretch before George Young got there, the GM, where they drafted Lawrence Taylor and all those great defensive players. But yeah, this is an odd time, and I think that's what factored into. I think stability. The fact that it's a stable thing, like we were saying, it's not 2 years,
or
it's not 1 year. Right? I think they wanted to give off the impression that it's a stable organization, which it is. But sometimes when you keep changing the coaches, the perception will be, hey, this team's not stable. But now it's time to get the quarterback. I always thought that these guys were on the clock when the quarterback when they got their quarterback. But now I think they're on the clock right now.
Want to hear something cute? Well, it's cute, but also it's interesting. As I looked up their postseason history, this popped up. The Giants, one of 5 teams that joined the NFL in 1925. That means that this upcoming season is their 100th anniversary.
This past season was the 100th season.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. So 2025 will be their 100th anniversary, but that was their 100th season. Gotcha. Well, just because they were established in 1925 and now it's 2025.
My 100th year is this year.
Yeah.
And the 100th season was last season.
Right. So they're the only one. They're the only one of that group that's still existing, which I think is kind of interesting. The team ranks 3rd among all NFL franchises with 8 NFL championship titles, but a bunch of those coming in the pre-Super Bowl era. But there's more. The Mara family goes all the way back to Timothy Mara.
Mm-hmm.
August 1st, 1925, he and Will Gibson granted a franchise by the NFL for their newly organized team in New York City, the New York Football Giants. Are you ready for this? The cost of the franchise.
I've heard this before.
$2,500. $2,500 in 1925. And if they were to sell today, they might be a $6 billion plus price tag.
That's tradition. You want to talk about tradition? Keeping that in the family, that's such an accomplishment to keep that in a family for that long.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
I mean, you even talk like in terms of New York sports, and the closest is the Steinbrenners, and you even have questions about them, about Hal, if he's going to keep the franchise long term, but or beyond him. So it's quite an accomplishment.
One more from John Mayer, because I think this, again, underscores that he is serious now. He's not messing around. Not that he would be the kind of guy that would lead you to think he's joking about anything. But he was asked about tanking at the end of the season so the Giants could get the number one pick.
If I had thought that we were tanking either one of those games, I would have fired everybody. We are never going to do that in this organization as long as I'm standing on this side of the grass.
If I had thought we were tanking, I would have fired everyone because we are not tanking. I wasn't sure if he was making a life or death reference at the end, as long as I'm standing on this side of the grass. I think that means as long as I'm above ground and not 6 feet under.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's a little morbid, but again, underscores the seriousness of what he's saying is we're not tanking ever. We do not do that. And the team had ended its franchise long losing skid at 11 games the week before, even though they had fallen to the Eagles in week 18. At least they got one more win and they did not end up with the number one draft pick. That goes to the Tennessee Titans. Party, party, confetti. Just, oh my gosh, what a mess. It's a mess for these teams. They've got to find their way through it. But the beauty of the NFL is you can go from worst to first in your division in the course of a year. We will not see a coaching change with one of the worst teams in the NFL, and you are what your record says you are, with the Giants. So this is a 3-14 season for them. But we will see a new head coach for the Jets, who weren't far behind, right? They ended up with four wins. Or how about the Jacksonville Jaguars, who were one of the worst teams in the NFL statistically? So they are both looking for new head coaches. Wait until you hear the former NFL head coach who believes he is a shoo-in for one of those jobs. Uh-huh. It's interesting. And this is all pre-playoffs, you guys. At A-Law Radio, at Amy After Hours to vote for the TD of the week. Last week of the regular season gave us some doozies as always. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. Which job opening out there, and these are actual job openings, not potential job openings. Let's not fire anyone today. Which job opening out there is the most attractive? I think I could make a case for a couple of different jobs, but which one do you think is the most attractive for possible candidates? Again, 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Shotgun for Rodgers. Breece Hall in motion. He's back to throw. Steps up in the pocket. Sidearms one over the middle. Caught. Touchdown. Tyler Conklin. And that is career touchdown pass number 500 for Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers takes the snap, drops back, looks right, looks over the middle, steps up in the pocket, dodges a sack, runs to the five, throws back in the end zone, caught, Devontae Adams, touchdown. 2:37 to go. Rodgers takes the snap, drops back to throw. Dancing in the pocket, dumps it right, caught by Breece Hall at the 10, cuts it upfield at the 5, gallops into the end zone, that's a Jet touchdown. Breece Hall makes it a two-score game again with 2.5 minutes to go for the Jets.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That's the voice of Bob Wischusen on Jets Radio. Big day for Aaron Rodgers in his career. He becomes just the fifth quarterback ever to throw 500 touchdown passes. He ends up with 503 because he had four of them on his final game in a Jets uniform. Okay, I don't know that that's completely set in stone yet, but I do believe it's his final game in a Jets uniform. Will he play again, or is this the end of his career? That's a major question. He's going back and forth about who knows what and people close to him, and no one's talking to Ian Rappaport. Oh my gosh, I was watching the Insiders on NFL Network, and they played the clip of Aaron Rodgers at the podium trying to answer the question. Actually, he wasn't really trying, but answering the question of whether or not he was planning on continuing with the Jets or continuing his playing career. And the reporter said, oh, Ian Rappaport's indicated he spoke to people close to you. So, of course, Rodgers, that gets under his skin. He can't let that go. So he responds with, people close to me? Well, I don't know Ian. And I don't think anyone that is close to me knows Ian. And then they go to Ian Rappaport, who's sitting right there on the set of NFL Insiders. And he kind of stumbles through it a little bit. Just, you know, I stand by my reporting. Rodgers finished up with no disrespect. Rappaport gave him credit for saying no disrespect, but of course acknowledged that generally that means that there is some disrespect. And then he, tit for tat, responded with his own, well, no disrespect, but I stand by my reporting. So anyway, who knows if the reporting is accurate or if the people who are talking to Ian Rappaport actually have the skinny on what Aaron Rodgers wants to do or plans to do or is thinking about at this point. But that's only one of the questions for the Jets. They still have to find not just a GM, but a head coach. Which one comes first? Well, that's also interesting. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We did not include Rodgers' 500th touchdown pass as one of our candidates for TD of the week. We didn't think that it would win. But the poll is up at Amy After Hours, and I'm in the process of putting it up on our Facebook page as well. Guess who really, really wants to return to the New York Jets? Rex Ryan, who is the last one that got him to the playoffs. They went to multiple AFC championship games with Rex Ryan defensive side of the ball was terrific, of course. More ground and pound. Mark Sanchez was the quarterback for part of that time. He is interviewing with the team on Tuesday. Who knows if an actual interview, but he's speaking to the team on Tuesday. And he told ESPN Radio in New York that he's the man for the job.
And the reason I think I'm going to get it is because I'm the best guy. And it ain't close. The thing that you have to do, you have to connect with the football team. You have to connect with your fan base. And the way they play, that's the most important thing. Not just the X's and O's and all that. Look, this Ben Johnson, I love him. I absolutely love him. But I'm a better candidate for this job than he would be.
So no Ben Johnson in New York, according to Rex Ryan. Though to be perfectly honest, I can't imagine that Ben Johnson would choose the Jets job over maybe others that he might be offered.
He's already said he's not. There's already word that he's not interested.
Right. I mean, I don't necessarily believe it when a coach says he's not interested, or that's been leaked, because sometimes it's about, hey, I'm in the middle of a playoff run here, I'm not interested. But I do think that if you're Ben Johnson, knowing how hot the job market is for him, that you can do better than the Jets. And in large part, he's an offensive guy. They don't have a quarterback. They still don't have a quarterback. So it's not Aaron Rodgers. At this point, I don't think it's anyone who's on the roster. They're not, unless they move up in the draft, are sitting in one of those top two spots where they could grab either Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. And honestly, you think about the guys who were drafted last year versus the guys who are available in this class, and most of the guys who were taken last year would probably go ahead of the two names that are being thrown out there right now. That's just my opinion. Maybe it's not accurate. The Giants choose number 3. You've got the Patriots at number 4. And the top there are Titans and Raiders. And so the Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders question may already be answered by the time that the Jets will pick at number 7. Unless, of course, they move up. So what do you do about quarterback? This is one reason why I don't think that it's a real attractive job, is because the quarterback question remains, and it's a tough one to answer. Though Rex Ryan seems to have an answer for the quarterback position as well. He would take Aaron Rodgers out behind the woodshed. No, okay, not that dramatic.
When you have a guy that doesn't show up for mandatory minicamp, and by the way, is your quarterback coming off an injury, I think that's an absolutely ridiculous message you sent to the team. And so, you know, obviously, if he comes back, things would be different. If he's back, it ain't going to be the country club, you know, show up whenever the hell you want to show up. That ain't going to happen. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. So Rex Ryan on ESPN Radio New York just put it all out there, believes that he is the man for the job, that he should head back to the Jets, and that he would clean house, and that Aaron Rodgers would be held accountable. But also, it kind of seems to indicate that he wouldn't want to keep Rodgers as his quarterback. I mean, I don't know if the ownership does. It sounds like Woody Johnson and Aaron Rodgers, their relationship is maybe not on the best terms. I'm not sure if I'd go so far as to say irreparable harm has been done. I don't think that that's the way that the owner wants to go. So it may not even matter what the coach wants.
Well, I think the new coach or new management structure will get in that room without Aaron Rodgers. I think it'll be made before anyone even gets there.
Man, you want to talk about a revolving door. Ryan was there from 09 to 14. And then it was Todd Bowles for 3 seasons. Adam Gase for 2 seasons. Robert Saleh took over, but he was fired halfway through, well, not even halfway, week 5 this year. And then Jeff Ulbrich has been in charge since then. I could be completely wrong. Maybe they interviewed Jeff Ulbrich, but I can't imagine that he's a legit candidate for that job either. A little bit in over his head, not prepared for the gig yet. But Rex Ryan believes he's the best man for the job. All right, that brings us to the Jacksonville Jaguars. As we're talking about openings, it's the Jets, It's the Saints. It's the Bears who want to interview Mike McCarthy, but also we're interested in Pete Carroll. So they're clearly going for someone who has not just coaching experience, but Super Bowl resume experience. Which one of these is the most attractive? I think in some cases you would say Jacksonville is, though they're definitely a project. And I mean a project that comes with a headache. You also have to work with Trent Baalke. It's not a new general manager situation. You're not going with someone new in the front office. He remains. So why, Shad Khan, do you fire Doug Peterson but not Trent Baalke?
The coaching, that is an area that, we need to fix now. But certainly over the last few years, I mean, we built a football administration and, a lot of things are working well there.
It's interesting, too, because going back to the preseason, I guess the night before the Jaguars kicked off the 2024 season, Shad Khan addressed the team and told them that he felt like they had the best roster they've ever had in Jaguars history. Well, since he took over the team, but, kind of bigger picture, they had one that they felt like could compete. And now here they are after a 4-13 season. My bad. I don't want to chip them on any of their wins. A 4-13 season. Doug Peterson's out, and Shad Khan is looking for what will be his sixth coach since buying the team in November of 2011. Sixth coach. Why not do a total overhaul, though? Because it's been pretty bad the last few years.
You've got 85 people working on that side, and you say, I'm going to get rid of them and find 85 new people that are going to be better than that? That's like shooting yourself in the foot.
Sounds like he doesn't want to be bothered.
Well, it is a large project, though, to replace 85 people. And I would agree with him. Not all 85 need to be replaced. But you got to make some kind of a change to indicate that the progress or the lack thereof, the direction that they're moving is not okay. They had some really embarrassing losses. Thinking about that Detroit Lions game where they nearly lost by 50 points. And their four wins this season were all against teams without winning records. I could go on and on about their stats. They're literally among the worst teams in the league statistically. But you remember, so this is to me the turning point. The major turning point for Doug Peterson goes back to November of 23. I was a month away from getting married. November of 23. You remember they were on top of the AFC South. They actually were competing. They were vying for the top seed in the conference, in the playoff picture. That shows you why November of 23 is, well, it's not a whole lot of anything until you can get through December. But they were 8-3. They ended up falling off the edge of a cliff. They lost, what was it, 6 of their last 7, 7 of their last 8. Let's see, if they were 8-3 and they finished below 500, I think they lost 7 of their last 8. Not only did they lose the AFC South title to the Houston Texans, but they've not been able to get back upright again. I know they lost a lot of games so they were blown out in a few, but they also lost a lot of games that were very close. That ended up being decided by a single score. 3-10 in one score games this season. Trevor Lawrence, after making some major steps forward in the first year with Doug Peterson, really hasn't since then. And remember, the first year under Peterson, they won the AFC South, right? They not only got behind 27 points, was it to the Chargers in the playoffs? But then they rallied in the second half. Remember, they were down 27 points. Trevor Lawrence threw 3 interceptions in the first half of that game. Remember, it was a wild card game. It was a Saturday wild card game. Here's how I know and I remember it. Because producer Jay and I, we were watching football. And they got down by 3 touchdowns. By 27 points. Nearly 4 touchdowns. And we decided we would watch Star Wars. So we actually started watching something different on that Saturday evening. We end up watching, I think it was an episode of Andor, which is one of the Star Wars series. We finish that up. We turn on the game again, and they have come within 3 points or something like that. And we're like, what happened? So, yeah, I think it was the Chargers. I'm pretty sure it was the Chargers collapse under Brandon Staley in that playoff game.
31-30.
Mm-hmm.
That was January 23.
Yep, so they came back in that game, and it appeared as though they were on the right trajectory. Right, Doug Peterson took over. Maybe they weren't going to win the Super Bowl that season after the 22 season, but it was going to be a lot better. They were actually fingered as a team to beat, a team to watch in the 23 season. So again, coming off of that playoff rally, very dramatic rally and a trip to the divisional round, they were 8-3 in November of last season. Sorry, meaning the 23 season, and they were challenging for best record in the AFC. And then the wheels came off. They fell off that figurative cliff, and they've never been able to get back on track. That was really the turning point. That was the moment. Well, moment. That was the sequence that lost Doug Peterson the job. I know it took until now, but they never were able to fix it after that. It just went steadily downhill after that.
That playoff game. They were losing 27-7 at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
That's wow. And now I'm remembering all of that.
Yeah.
Because that,
but they went behind 27-0.
Right. Right.
I think they scored right before half to make it a 20-point game.
Right.
Didn't he throw three interceptions in the first half?
Was it four? He finished with four on the day.
Okay, so maybe all four were in the first half. Yeah. Yeah, it was unbelievable to watch. And the Chargers were on cloud nine. This was going to be their ascension. And then they fell apart in the second half. The Jaguars come back. And it's this great moment for Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence. But they really, after being 8-3 the following year, living up to some of the expectations that were placed on them, they crumbled. They collapsed. And his job, I think, at that point was in jeopardy. And really, they could never save it. They never could seemingly get out of the quicksand or the drowning, like the water, the drowning, whatever. At eight, I'm not laughing about that. It's not funny, but just the idea that they kind of got their head above water, but really could never get back to the point where they were saved. At A-Law Radio, which is the most attractive opening that we have right now. You can also vote for the TD of the week. I've promised you an update on the light. We're going to get to the light because you all keep asking in amongst all of our football posts. There's, hey, what happened with the neighbor's light over and over again? Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, the Jaguars making a change as they fired Doug Peterson after 3 years and one playoff appearance. However, they did retain GM Trent Baalke. So was he surprised to be given that fifth year in Jacksonville?
Ultimately, that's not my decision. That's the decision of ownership. And I certainly respect the decision that's been made. And don't take the job lightly. You know, the real fact, the bottom line is we weren't productive on the field. We didn't win enough games, and I don't shy away from that. I'm just as responsible as anybody else.
Bears looking for a new head coach, reportedly seeking permission from the Cowboys to speak to Mike McCarthy, whose contract runs out this month in Dallas. Jerry Jones still unclear if McCarthy is returning.
I don't know that I am considering making a change, is really what I'm trying to say. I agree with you. And the complimentary verbiage or the complimentary talk about him is, I think, fact. I think I can say that about him no matter what I'm thinking or not thinking.
Giants kept both GM Joe Shane and head coach Brian Daboll. His owner John Mara also gave his thoughts on tanking for a better draft pick.
If I had thought that we were tanking either one of those games, I would have fired everybody. We are never going to do that in this organization as long as I'm standing on this side of the grass.
Packers took a hit to their offense. They prepare for the Eagles in the wild card. Christian Watson suffered a torn ACL that ends his season. One other note, the Chargers reportedly set to add Ezekiel Elliott to their practice squad. Checking the NBA with the Kings outlast the Heat in double overtime, 123-118. Domantas Sabonis, 21, as part of a triple-double. Suns erased the Sixers, 109-99. Magic handled the Knicks, 103-94. Bucks punished the Raptors 128-104. Pacers overwhelmed the Nets 113-99. Anthony Edwards poured in 37 as the T-Wolves edged the Clippers 108-106. Bulls rallied by the Spurs 114-110. Zach LaVine 35, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. Grizzlies too much for the Mavericks 119-104. And the Pistons down the Blazers 118-115. College football, North Dakota State up into Montana State in the FCS Championship 35-32. Cam Miller threw for 200 yards, ran for another 121 with four total touchdowns. And college hoops, 12th-ranked Houston shut down TCU 65-46. I'm Marco Belletti.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Infinity Sports Network. That's Infinity Sports Network to follow us on Instagram.
Blitz is coming. Throw to the middle. Ball is caught. Upended. Fant. Is he into the end zone? He is. Touchdown, Seahawks. Fant lying flat on his back. Hangs on to the football. Helped up by his teammates. He said, what happened?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Steve Rabel on Seahawks Radio. I know they did not make the playoffs, but they did finish with a pretty impressive performance by one Geno Smith. And here's where I have to do the mea culpa before I talk about the neighbor's light. And trust me, there's not a whole lot positive to say there. I know the Seahawks just fired their offensive coordinator after missing the playoffs. So there's your tie, Ryan Grubb. He only lasted one season with Mike McDonald, and McDonald decided that they would make the change. They were a 10-win team, but fell short of the postseason there in the NFC. And so Geno Smith had a lot on the line in his final game. Even though they could not make the playoffs, he still had a lot to play for. Maybe you heard this at some point over the last 36 hours. I teased it, this exact topic, in the final segment of the show, which was Monday morning. And then I got busy, started talking about something else, and I didn't pay off on the tease. I didn't tell you what I was referring to when I said one player in the NFL made $6 million in incentives on the final Sunday. And so that's my faux pas, but I'm circling back. It's not quite 24 hours, but it's 23 hours since I did not tell you who I was referring to and did not pay off on my tease. So I'm sorry about that, but I'm coming back to it. I'm circling back to it now. Geno Smith finished up that game 20 of 27, 223 yards and four touchdown passes. He had a terrific passer rating, nearly 138 for the game. And because he met multiple benchmarks, including the career high four touchdown passes, he met multiple benchmarks. He walked away with a $6 million payday, bonuses essentially, because he reached some different marks that were built into his contract in that game. Isn't that awesome? I know that he would, well, I shouldn't speak for him. I don't know that he would rather make the playoffs, so I don't want to assume that every dude out there cares more about postseason and Super Bowl than he does about money, because that would be wrong, right? There are some guys out there who are playing for the money and are doing it because it's their best way and their quickest avenue to secure a future for their families and for their kids and their grandkids. So I don't want to assume that everybody is out there to win, because that's probably not accurate on any team even. Not all guys are out there because they love the game and because they want to win hardware. I think they would tell you that they do, but that's probably not the truth. Anyway, Geno Smith was in line for a lot of money. Could he hit some certain benchmarks in that final game? And I'm looking real quick so I can get you the breakdown. But he got all this escalator money because of the way that they finished up the season, which I think is pretty awesome. So it gets added to his roster bonus if he's still on the team come March. But either way, that $6 million is his. So if each one of them were the escalators, the incentives were $2 million apiece, and he hit all three. So he needed 185 passing yards to finish with at least 4,282. He got that in the fourth quarter. It's an odd number, right? But he got that in the fourth quarter. He needed to finish at or above 69.7555% completion rate, which he did because he nailed all but seven of his passes. And then he also broke the franchise records he set in these categories in 22. He had four touchdown passes, most in any game in his dozen seasons in the league. And so he cashes in on all of this money and ends up with $6 million in his pocket because of the performance over the course of the season, yes, but because of the performance and because of the fact that the team got to 10 wins. Congratulations to Geno. I think that's amazing considering where he started his career, right? A lot of times the quarterbacks who begin with the Jets, they don't ever see this type of future. And Geno would tell you a lot of it's on him. He's matured. He's gotten smarter. He's gotten better at the game of football and commanding the game and managing the game of football. He's found a home in Seattle that predates Mike McDonald, and they've kept him there. And they ended up with 10 wins. And he ends up with a whole lot of extra money because of his individual accomplishments this year. So good for him. $6 million, though. That's impressive. We know that Mike Evans got $3 million with his incentives that he met by getting to 1,000 yards at the end of the season. Very last play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in their regular season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're up at the top of the hour. I really don't need a whole lot of time to tell you what's happening with the neighbor's light. Nothing. That's what's happening with the neighbor's light.
Okay.
Producer Pete, it's still shining as brightly as ever. Can I tell you that because it was a cloudy morning, we had snow coming on Monday. When I went to bed at 8 a.m. Eastern time, the light was still on. Unfreaking believable. Here's what the last we heard from the town. This was before the holidays. Our friend Joe, who's the inspector for our town. My husband went to visit him, took him some baked goods. He said my wife made all these baked goods and shared them with Joe. In fact, my husband said, let's make sure we take some to Joe and thank him for how kind he's been to help us. So here's what Joe told us, that he's actually knocked on the neighbor's door multiple times. Now it's about personal contact. It's about speaking to the neighbor face-to-face since the neighbor has not made any changes after receiving multiple letters from the town. So Joe knocked on the guy's door multiple times. Guy didn't answer. Whether he was home or he wasn't home, I don't know. But I don't think the neighbor gives a crap. He is going to pay the fine even rather than turn off that light or change the light. So it's still shining now, 5 months later, and we're waiting for another update from the town. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.